540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Former President Trump has been booked at the Fulton County, Georgia jail, fingerprinted and mugshot taken. Trump faces 13 felony counts, including conspiracy and racketeering in Georgia's election interference case. He has 18 co-defendants. And as CBS's Robert Costa reports,
he's been shaking up his legal team. Drew Finley, who was his longtime lawyer in Georgia, worked on this agreement about how he was going to handle bond. He's now out. Trump has brought in a new lawyer, Stephen Sadow, a veteran criminal lawyer to deal with the legal issues in Georgia.
Earlier, Trump's bond was set at $200,000. Seven others have until noon tomorrow to turn themselves in. U.S. officials say the plane crash that is thought to have killed Russian mercenary chief Yevgeny Prigozhin was likely caused by an explosion. CBS's Deborah Pata reports from southern Ukraine.
All 10 bodies have been recovered and taken for identification. The man who once said the only thing he could not forgive was betrayal acknowledged that Yevgeny Prigozhin was probably on that doomed flight. He had a complicated fate, President Vladimir Putin said, and he made some serious mistakes.
Authorities say the retired police officer walked into a Southern California bar and first shot his estranged wife and her dinner companion. More from Orange County Sheriff Don Barnes.
I do not believe that there was any argument that ensued. He drew a weapon. She was struck once.
She is among the six injured. Three died. Barnes says the retired officer went back to his car to get more guns. He was shot and killed by officers who arrived on the scene. Excessive heat warnings stretch from the upper Gulf Coast to southern Minnesota and Wisconsin. Trey Williams works outside as a window washer in Indianapolis.
It is not worth passing out or having any type of heat stroke or anything just to clean a job. So listen to your body. Make sure you know if you're going to pass out or you're feeling dehydrated.
The National Weather Service says Chicago has had its first 100-degree day in over 10 years, but the humidity made it feel like 111. Pandemonium is coming to an end in the nation's capital. More from CBS's Christopher Cruz.
The three pandas now at the National Zoo in Washington are set to be returned to China by December 7th. The bears were on loan to the zoo, and the agreement to allow them to live there is expiring after several extensions. Pandas have lived at the National Zoo since 1972 and have drawn hordes of visitors ever since. Zoo officials say they continue to talk with their Chinese counterparts, but for now it looks like there will soon be no pandas in Washington for the first time in half a century. Christopher Cruz, CBS News, Washington.
Stocks closed lower on Wall Street today. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Severe storms are following up 2 days of extreme heat. Thunderstorms started popping up at around 4:30, with Waukesha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties getting the most action. High winds and hail are involved. Temperatures have dropped dramatically with the changing of the front. We'll keep you posted with any further severe weather information. The Waukesha Christmas Parade Memorial at Greedy Park will feature a wall adorned with personalized clay tiles. Community members will have the opportunity to craft the tiles at public gatherings in the fall. To save a space, a minimum contribution of $25 towards the memorial fund is necessary. Menominee Falls-based Kohl's is reporting a decline in profits and sales for the second quarter. The results did exceed Wall Street predictions due to cost-cutting measures and inventory adjustments. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba.
Please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
In Ecuador, in a historic national referendum, Ecuadorians voted overwhelmingly to ban oil drilling in Yasuni National Park in the Amazon rainforest, one of the most diverse biospheres in the world. It's hailed as a historic example of climate democracy, and it was also a victory for indigenous peoples and conservationists.
I will share that hailing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Historic day. Historic indeed. I read the headline, Donald Trump chooses a bail bondsman. There are few moments in history when you can go, I don't think, you know, president chooses bail bondsman. I don't think those words have ever been said before. So this is his history. I mean, think about in the entirety of humanity, that sentence until today, not said. And the thing that can be right from the start, $200,000 bond, you would think a billionaire pocket change. You know, why would you need a bail bondsman? Why would you? I know he's going to need his money. I guess that's what it is. But hey, Fulton County was bracing for chaos. They were bracing for the worst. They put up barriers. They had all kinds of extra people there. Yeah, because they thought, hey, Trump's been, kind of stoking this. This there might be violence thing. People showed up, a right-wing crackpot, and about 22 people who got lost off of 95. So that was about it. And it was very quiet. Went through the back door. Seems appropriate. Now, the part here that I'm a little disappointed in, because I've been playing this up for the last couple of days, is that Trump was supposed to be treated like every other criminal defendant. And, everyone had to go in and get their picture taken, and they were weighed, and they were measured, and they were all this stuff. Trump got to put his own vital signs down, his own hair color, his own weight. So that means, because we were waiting for this, the betting line had grown to 278.5, the over under, and 77% of people were choosing the over. I was in the over camp. He got to write 215 down. I'm sorry, and I'm not fat shaming, but there is no way that man at 6'3 is 215 when Rudy, 5'11, measured in at 230. It's just, sorry, it's just not happening. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. And there's got to be an investigation. Because, you know, the bookies made out. Because everybody chose the over. If I were putting money down, I would have chose the over. I would have chose the way over. And I got to now think everybody lost their money. So there you go. Now, the bail bondsman. The Foster Bail Bonds LLC, now the most famous historical bail bonds company in the country, overtaking Chico's. You may remember Chico's from the Bad News Bears. We now have Foster's Bail Bonds, which is now the most famous. So there you go. You have it. The picture taken, the mugshots out there. The internet's going crazy over it because they're not sure if it's a real picture, if a photo. And here's the thing. Don't care. Don't care because this is a sad day. I mean, the reality is, you know, I make light of this and it's a joke. This is a sad day that in this country, this is what has to happen because this has to happen. We have to hold people accountable when they break the law. And he's accused of some pretty serious stuff. And as I've been saying all along, I take no joy in this. Because this is a massive distraction from all the things that we need to be doing. This is a massive distraction from moving this country forward. It's a massive distraction in what are we doing and what are we leaving to our kids? Now, if you watched the GOP, whatever that was, I'm not going to call it a debate. It seemed more like a reality TV show at its core. It seemed like more of a scripted reality show. It was entertaining. I'll give you credit. I watched a portion. It was entertaining. You know, people going after each other. It was like one of those stupid, you know, everyone's locked in a room together kind of thing. And as I said, quite entertaining. Not how you run a democratic republic. Not how you engage in self-governance, not how you choose a leader to lead the free world. But if Rome is truly burning, it was bread and circus. It was all of the things that you know we come to expect. You know, the guy who cares the least gets the most attention. The guy who says the most outrageous stuff, acts the fool, he's the guy who gets the most attention. Thus, Vivek Ramaswamy, they are saying, is going to get a bump for his performance and say, hey, climate change is a hoax. There are more people dying from climate policy. And even the Republicans booed that a little, but got attention for it. And this is where the reality TV show part of our politics has taken over. It doesn't matter anymore what your policies are. In fact, you know, policies are bad because then people have to debate that and you have to get them passed. It's easy just to say a bunch of, you know what? And they did. So, you know, we got bread and circus. So the question that, you know, popped into my mind, are you surprised that you find clowns at a circus? No, that's what we got. 8 clowns on a stage attempting to out-clown the other and to uproarious laughter from the half-full arena in Milwaukee. And it's as someone who wants to move the country forward, it's frustrating. But as someone who wants to be entertained, this could have gone right into the movie Idiocracy. It could have fit right into there going, you know, this is how they choose Macho Camacho to be the president of the country. And what's interesting is they all had their uniform. It was a red tie event. I'm sure you saw it. And I'm going, is that, you know, in honor of their missing leader? Is that part of their, is the red tie part of the uniform? Wow. And here's the thing, you know who won the debate? The guy who didn't show up. That's the part that's hysterical. You know, they didn't, I don't think they moved at all towards getting closer to Trump. He won the debate by not showing up, by being above the fray as the ankle biters with at 1% and 3% were going after each other. Now, I find that quite interesting that a guy who's, you know, now what, indicted 4 times, impeached twice, you know, all of the slew of other things, he's still leading by, what, 30, 40 points over the next person, which is DeSantis, who did himself no good during the debate at all. But you know what? the ratings were there. 13 million people, I guess, nearly 13 million people tuned in. That is just a little bit above the 2016 number. And I go, do I care? Now, most Republicans thought DeSantis won. If you watched it, I don't know how you came away with that. I think that was hopes and dreams. 29%, and this isn't a lot, 29% said DeSantis, 26% Ramaswamy, 15% Nikki Haley, and wow, 7% to Pence. Now, what's interesting is they agreed on some things. They hate teachers' unions. They want to destroy the public sector, abortion, something a lot of them agreed on. So, hey, let's make sure that we go after women. I can't come back from, there was nothing that came out of them other than Nikki Haley in a moment. There was a moment that Nikki Haley said, look, you know, we talk about being fiscally responsible. You know, Republicans are just as bad at spending. And she pointed out something that I didn't even know. That I knew Republicans helped bring earmarks back, and I'm not opposed to earmarks. As long as they're transparent, as long as we debate them and they're for the public good, I'm all in favor of it. It's what we used to bring. Congress people used to bring home the bacon, which is how we got hospitals and museums and schools and bridges and all the things that we need. But as she pointed out, in the 2024 budget, Republicans requested $7.4 billion in earmarks. Democrats only 2.8. Now you go, but Rick, that's only because the Republicans control the House, and probably true. But as she's pointed out, they're the big spenders. Her punchline is, you know, we need an accountant because she's got a bachelor's degree in accounting. But it was entertaining. It was interesting. It was fun. But again, not how we run a democracy. Not how we run this country. Not how we should be choosing the leader of the free world. And I can't step back away from that. So I want to get your thoughts. If you paid attention to it, I know a lot of people, you know, I've asked, said, yeah, I didn't waste my time. I would rather watch paint dry, which would have been just as entertaining, to be honest, and just as useful, because this isn't moving anything. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it seems the internet's having some fun with the weight question. Lots of memes around, Hillary and Obama laughing. And look, you know, that's a little bit of special treatment there. Let's quick go to the phones. We got Kurt on line one. Kurt, how we doing?
Good evening, Rick, and thank you for taking my call. Last night, I tried watching that debate after I got off the phone with you, and I just couldn't stomach it after a half hour.
No, I get that, you know, but if you just step back and you watch it as the train wreck, because this is what I did. I just sat back and go, this isn't about democracy. This isn't about, you know, picking a leader. This is just watching a train wreck. With those lenses on, it was, for me, it was quite interesting.
It was, I mean, and I'm not even a registered Republican. I'm a registered Democrat in the state of Ohio, which is few and far between where I live. But, you know, I watched that one thing where they played that song that you like to talk about, that rich man or from north of Richmond or whatever.
It's not that I like the song. It's that, look, I understand the emotion. I understand the feeling.
Right.
And to mock that guy was the wrong direction, but they brought that up.
Right. And that's what they said. What does that song mean to you? And I'm like, is this like an essay? That must have been the how would you save the world portion of the Miss America pageant or something. I don't know. But, you know, I did watch the former president Trump, after he was done being booked on C-SPAN. It was like a minute long, maybe 2 minutes at most. And he's still claiming, I had every right to contest the election and blah, 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 blah.
It's his only defense,
and
Kurt.
No one's arguing that. And no one's arguing that. That's the thing. It's what you did. It was the actions that you did after everything said there was no fraud, there was no wrongdoing. That's what you're getting busted for. Not the fact that you, one, lied about the election because you have a free speech to lie, but also you do have the right to contest a free and fair election if you don't think it's right.
Yeah.
But once you've been proven wrong, you have got to move on.
No, it's also the fact that he called Georgia and said, hey, find me some votes, and then did a whole bunch of stuff to twist some arms. That's a big part of this as well.
Exactly. And I do have that in my archives. I actually have that phone. I also have the Francis Watkins one, which, did you see that Raffensperger and Watkins have to testify before the trial?
Of course they do.
And they better.
As they
better.
Should. And look, we need this as a country. We need to expose all of this. And it needs to be done in the sunlight of day, to where everyone gets to see it, even if you don't want to.
I think the speaker of the House of Georgia needs to, because didn't it come out recently that he called and pressured the Speaker of the House of Georgia as well?
Yeah. Well, they're pressuring everybody.
Exactly. And you know what? The next big day is going to be September 8th when they have his arraignment. Yeah. And so far, state law in Georgia, unless a judge says otherwise, that's going to be televised. That's 2 weeks and a day from today.
Yep.
Well, and everybody needs to watch it.
No, it's one more thing to put on the calendar. But, Kurt, appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much. I'm going to move along. Let's go to Steve in Chicago on line two. Steve, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And I wanted to point out to people, make no mistake, half of the preparation for this debate on the part of these candidates was not so much about how they were going to go after one another, but how they were going to deal with the 500-pound elephant in the room, which is Donald Trump.
Or 215 pounds, as he got the write down on the form.
Exactly. But, yeah, it's basically trying to walk this tightrope in which you, on the one hand, want to attack Donald Trump, but on the other hand, you don't want to alienate the base, his base, which you will need eventually if you hope to secure the nomination and win in the general. So, you know, it was almost an impossible task. Now, the candidates, to one degree or another, you know, either refuse to address the issue, or in some cases, such as Chris Christie, they actually give him credit. He went after Donald Trump. He's one of the few people in his party doing so. I suspect part of it has to do with the fact that he's doing so abysmally in the polling, so that he feels that this is a strategy that may yield something for him. I mean, make no mistake, these people all showed up there in a desperate effort to see who can come in second in a race. And all of them are hoping that something knocks Donald Trump out of this, so that therefore it clears the field and one of them possibly can ascend. But until Donald Trump is cleared from the field, you know, there's really nothing in terms of where these people's campaign is going.
Yeah, no, and they all came with their package lines. They got to get their zinger, their sound bites, so that they can get on Fox News, so that they could get that bump. And that's what I saw. And what was interesting to me is, you know, it was to uproarious laughter, you know, and applause at every point. It was like, it was just a weird kind of feel. And again, I go back to that reality TV feel. Did you get any sense of that?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, so for people who don't know it, these things are staged events, including who they're going to put in the audience. So, you know, you had supporters and detractors for everybody there. And that's why you had, you know, some people who, you know, and when people said things such as what Chris Christie said on a number of occasions, you know, you saw him get booed because God forbid that they should attack their patron saint, Donald Trump. Beyond that, what do you get out of these things? As you pointed out, all of these debates in the modern age They're not a substantive discussion about public policy. It's just these prepackaged zingers and, you know, one-liners. And then they know then cable news, the internet, and everywhere else is going to regurgitate that great zinger. They're not going to talk about the great policy discussion, if there is one. It's just going to be about who got that line in, you know, going back to Lloyd Benson, you know, well, you're no Jack Kennedy. Well, yeah, everybody wants that now. And unfortunately, this is what it's devolved to. I mean, it's August, it's 2023. All this really matters to in terms of going forward with regard to the election is that some of these people may not be in this contest in a few months because their money and their support's going to dry up. And that's pretty much what we're trying to do. We're trying to filter out who can survive. I mean, right now, these people are all trying to compete pretty much for the same political real estate, whereas Donald Trump has the rest of that party locked up for himself. I would argue that people like Vivek Ramaswamy and perhaps a couple of others are trying to sort of carve out for themselves a piece of the Trump pie. I don't know if they hope that he'd select them as a vice presidential candidate, whatnot. I don't know what they're trying to promote. They want a gig on Fox someday. Who knows? They want to sell books. But there's all sorts of reasons you run for high office, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you actually believe you're going to win.
Yeah, no, they're actually running for a handful of people, not for actual votes. And those people have big checkbooks. I think that's what your point is.
Right, and to be clear, there's a big difference between 2016 and 2020 and today. A lot of the big money donors in the Republican Party, they realize that they need Donald Trump's base, but they're not in a hurry to put their money behind Donald Trump because he's a loser. Yep. And they feel that he's going to pull down the rest of the party in 2024 because he's going to alienate a lot of independents. He's going to alienate some Republicans. And again, Democrats don't need these people to vote for them. All they need is for them not to show up on election day.
That is exactly it. Steve, I appreciate the thoughts, man. Good stuff. Let's quick go to the phones, get Alice on before the break. Alice, how are we doing?
We're doing okay. I got bingo early last night.
I saw. Congratulations. What'd you win?
WAPO was brilliant. You had to pick 9 choices out of, there was like 24 different things that you could pick. So I won.
I'll give you the pat on the back. Congratulations.
Thank you. I don't know what I won, but I won.
Atta girl.
So then I wanted to tell you that I guess that it was an explosion that did the plane thing in Russia. They were saying, oh, how interesting that, you know, it was an explosion on the plane.
Yeah, that's so they could throw him out the window of the plane.
Hey, that's usually their MO. You know, they like the windows. And then I wanted to tell you just 2 more things. Number 3, Kellyanne Conway was writing a big op-ed in the Washington Post, and she was claiming that Republicans need to make clear and go on the offensive about abortion rights if they want to win. I'm thinking, go crawl back under your rock. She's an idiot. And then the last thing, this is for your Trump supporters out there. There is a T-shirt Donald Trump is selling now with his mugshot on it. Says not guilty for $47. Just came online. So y'all make sure that you send him your $47 to get your T-shirt.
Well, I got to tell you, I would do the same thing. I mean, he's a master manipulator. He's a master at getting into the flock's pocket. And this is... there's no surprise here for me. He's got to lean into this. It's his only defense.
Exactly. Yeah, I just thought, I'll bet you he sold a couple hundred thousand already because, you know, the Trump supporters. But you have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks,
oh,
Alice.
And I'm glad Sarah's back. See ya.
See ya. Thanks so much. No, I mean, look, at the end of the day, this is the weird thing. You go back to 2016, and I remember, I remember going, look, this is all about merchandising. This guy's a con man. You know, it's all about what can he get? What can he sell? And immediately you got flags and T-shirts and hats. I mean, the merchandising for a campaign like no other point in the history of the country. Normally, this is the weird part. Normally, campaigns give away their swag. Here's a hat. Here's a bumper sticker. Here's, you know, I don't remember candidates having flags in the past. But This guy figured out how to get working people to dig into their pocket and pay big money for crappy Chinese-made stuff. And you drive around my neighborhood and you see people with all of the Trump paraphernalia. And, you know, this is where I come back to the bail bondsman thing. With all of the money that he's fleeced out of the American people, out of the MAGA red hat world, you would think he could, you know, cough up the 200 grand, wouldn't need to pay the 20,000 to get the bail bondsman. He'd just take it out of his pocket. But no. And there will be more fleecing. I'm expecting to see these kind of T-shirts and stuff, because what this is moving us towards, more defiance. And he's going to dig in towards that. Hey, there might be violence. There might be somebody. And my concern is not that we're going to see large scale stuff, because you saw today in Fulton County, not much. It's that lone kook. It's that guy everyone knows in the neighborhood. That's what's worrying me. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. We'll take a quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day Michael Siegel, business agent for New York City's Local 3 IBEW, announced the lights would be going out on Broadway for a half an hour. Electricians had been on strike for nearly a week to protest Consolidated Edison's refusal to employ union electricians for work on its new waterside plant. The company claimed it could only use members of the Brotherhood of Edison Employees, an independent union. The walkout also affected electricians at area construction sites and at 25 defense contractors across the city. The union had agreed to exempt electricians at the Brooklyn Navy Yards, where the strike held up work on 4 battleships. Also, the IBEW allowed electricians at Ford Instrument to return to work, given they had orders for $100 million in defense instruments. Siegel announced that at 9 p.m. the following evening, maintenance men not on strike would pull the switches on all signs in Times Square in sympathy to bring attention to their plight. After the half-hour blackout, the IBEW continued to fight injunctions brought by the New York Electrical Contractors Association. Harry Van Arnsdale Jr., business manager for Local 3, declared the blackout had been more successful than they had hoped. He characterized the switch-off as a blackout for enlightenment. Naval officials complained, however, that the strike held up vital defense projects. Newspapers noted that Broadwayites suddenly noticed the moon when the estimated 10 million watts of super lighting was turned off. A Times Square veteran noted it was the darkest since 1918 when a Zeppelin raid alarm caused a blackout. The strike was called off a week later when Con Ed acknowledged its previous agreement with the IBEW. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Last week, T-Mobile, my cell phone provider, pinged me with a rude message. Henceforth, we will screw you out of an extra $5 a month. What? Had I done something wrong? No. Would I be getting some added benefit for my $5? No. It seems that T-Mobile bean counters have just arbitrarily decided that we customers who use credit cards to pay our phone bills online must pay an extra fiver each month as a payment processing fee. Yes, we're to pay them to take our money. Bonnie and Clyde were not that brazen. You can avoid the add-on if you give your bank account number to T-Mobile, allowing it and who knows who else to have direct access to your personal stash of cash. No. Tut-tut, say the T-Mobilers. Your private info is perfectly secure with us. Do they think we have sucker wrappers around our heads? Just 8 months ago, their security system let thieves swipe the personal data of 37 million customers, including names, account numbers, addresses, phone numbers, and birth dates. Well, sniff free market ideologues, just switch to a competitor. But AT&T, Verizon, etc. have all adopted the exact same thieving give-us-your-bank-account scheme. Phone service today is a shared monopoly, not a free market, and it's now copycatting airlines, banks, and other monopolistic profiteers that constantly fabricate add-ons and pricing gimmicks to gouge consumers. This is Jim Hightower saying, T-Mobile rose to telecom prominence a decade ago by attacking its rivals for overcharging and abusing consumers. It ran ads publicly demanding that AT&T and others stop their greedy practices, quote, because it's the right thing to do. But now that it's a monopolistic giant, T-Mobile's new line is that might makes right. So it has joined the industry's consumer abuse greed game.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So funny comment on the inner tubes. Evidently, the internet believes two more counts of perjury should be added to the list of 6-3-215. At least one charge of perjury. There's no way he's 215. And like I said, bookies are smiling ear to ear because 77% of the weight money was on the over 278.5. So bookies, well, the house never loses. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the, we're going to call this Weightgate. How about that? I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story. RawStory.com, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Weightgate, that's brilliant.
Weightgate.
I was talking to my parents who called me. I didn't talk to them for a few days, and they were just like, what's going on? Did he end up being booked or whatever? I was like, yeah. And so we were trying to guess what the weight was going to be. And my mom was like, oh, I'd say 265, 275. And I was like, is this like Price is Right rules where like you can't go over? Because that's, you know, then I'm more like a 260, right? Like you want to be more conservative.
Yeah, but I was more in the 290 range.
215?
Yeah.
Oh,
No, look, if Giuliani's 230 at 5'11", and Trump is, you know, 4 inches taller than him, I don't know. I don't know how you make that argument. But
here's the fun thing: the Mark Meadows reported 6'1" and 240, and I posted a picture on Twitter of the two of them side by side, and they're pretty much the same height. And you know, Trump wears lifts, so that's an inch right there. And I mean, if Meadows is 240, then, you know, Trump is way over that.
But here's the thing. This is the least of my concerns in this moment.
I know, right?
I mean, look, if Rome is truly burning, I mean, it is the bread and circus. So we might as well, you know, go and partake. But the reality is, you know, I don't know if you saw the circus last night. Not surprised that 8 clowns showed up.
I know. That's the crazy thing is, I mean, I think we knew that they were all going to be sort of yelling at each other, and they had to do something that would impact, you know, that would leave a lasting impact and that people would remember them by. What I found the most interesting out of it, though, is that Ron DeSantis really didn't do anything. And it reminded me a little bit, you remember that old 80s movie War Games? And the computer's like, an interesting game. The only winning move is not to play.
Right.
I was like, that's pretty much what Ron DeSantis' performance was last night, is he was just like, blah, 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 you know.
No, the more I see him, the more unlikable he is. I mean, there's no path for him to be president because, you know, policy, all the crazy policy stuff, all the anti-LGBT, all the attack on corporations, all of the not knowing what woke is, all of that stuff, you know, you would think would endear him to the right. And it hasn't, because he's about as interesting as a, no, I'm going to be
a shoehorn.
Okay.
A shoehorn. He's as interesting as a shoehorn. The thing is whenever you're in Iowa, New Hampshire, those are the kind of early caucus and primary states where you pretty much have to go appear in everybody's living room one time. You have to shake everybody's hand one time. It's a very small, both of them are very small states. So the retail politics aspect of this is a really big deal. And I think that's why Trump, you know, refused to play it. And he's kind of refusing to play it again this time, too. And he lost. And, you know, I think, honest to God, DeSantis just is meeting more and more people. And the more people he meets, the more his poll numbers go down, because people are just like, he's weird. Something's not right with him. You know, people get that weird vibe where they're like, what's up with this guy? You know?
No, I mean, look, since his great reboot, you know, he's dropped what, 11 points in the polls.
Yeah. Oh, reboot. More like stepping on your poll numbers with your boot.
Anything catch your attention? You know, I said last night, I wasn't going to pay attention to it yesterday. They're not serious candidates. It's not, the Republican Party's not a serious party right now. There's no real policy, direction. There's nothing there to help working people. Anything in that that you took away that you saw anything positive?
I mean, really, the only positive thing I think that came out of it for me is when they asked the question of whether or not you would still support Donald Trump if he was convicted of a felony or of whatever crime he's charged with. And a couple of people sort of raised their hands slowly. And then Ron DeSantis sort of looked around at everybody else. And then he kind of raised his hand up a little bit. That was funny to me. I think it's also telling of the Republican Party being basically eaten by the ego of Donald Trump. Like they have been completely consumed, including Chris Christie.
Yeah. I said Trump won last night. Didn't show up. He won.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yeah, absolutely. The only winning move is not to play.
Oh, that is it. Anything surprise you? I mean, the Nikki Haley thing caught my attention, where she called out Republicans for being big spenders, which I thought was kind of an interesting move.
Yeah, I mean, she had a couple of moments where she went after some people, which again, I feel like you sort of have to do to become a big deal. And it seems like today the big donors and Fox News are just like, "Ooh, Nikki Haley," and it's like, I get why they're being that way, but the thing is Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, I don't know if she can get elected there, even after being governor, in South Carolina. I don't know that she could get elected there.
Yeah.
So it's just, again, the Republican Party is bought and sold by Donald Trump. And as much as Nikki Haley wants to make a good college try at it, I just don't think she's going to make it.
And look, I tried to listen for policy stuff, and Chris, all the governors are saying, in my state we attacked public sector workers, we attacked government workers, we went after teachers, we left billions of dollars for down the road, all the same kind of cookie cutter stuff. And you look at the fact that their states are education at the bottom of the education list, high poverty rates, and you go, I don't want that for the country. And I don't think we're having the discussion as a country of, do we want to emulate South Carolina? Do we want to emulate Arkansas? Do we want the country to look like those places? I would say when you lay it out to people, the argument is going to be, no, I don't think we do.
No. And I think that was the other thing that is so bad for these candidates, is they have a really crappy record to run on. And it's exactly like what you were saying over and over. They acted like, well, we went after these people, we hurt these people. This is the entirety of my political career, is hurting all of these different people that we went after. But they never helped anybody. Like, tell me what you're going to do to help people. Call me crazy, but like, what do we get out of this?
We're going to make them pull themselves up by the bootstraps. That's what we're going to do.
Right,
we're like, going to give you the opportunity to sink or swim.
We're going to step on everybody else so that you can climb over their dead bodies, essentially.
And as I was watching this, and again, these debates have devolved every year, every cycle. They seem to get worse and worse and worse. And
oh God, I know.
And I was thinking about it today, and I was having a conversation with a friend of what was the moment when the old Fonzie frame? When did they jump the shark? And I was thinking back to 2011. Do you remember the question that a gay soldier, on video from, I think he was actually in Iraq, when we did away with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and said, hey, I can finally be myself, and I can live my life. And Rick Santorum got the question, and went on this ramble about, there should be no sexual activity in the military, and we should put people back in the closets and all that. I think it was that moment when that soldier got booed by the crowd, that I think that's when the Republican Party, again, we're always looking for those moments, but I think that's one of those moments that just sticks out to me.
You know, That definitely, I remember that. I didn't remember that Rick Santorum got the question. I just remember that it was a really bad answer, and I remember the guy asking it.
Of course Santorum got the question.
Of course, what right?
Google Santorum, and you will now know why.
I know, right? What happened to that guy? Well, Santorum, that's what happened.
He's at a think tank making a couple hundred grand a year.
Of course he is.
Because Republicans know how to take care of their own.
But I think for me, the downfall has been the parties taking over the debates in a way that is looking good for the party and not something that Americans care about. I mean, if you have the Republican, it's like the town halls, you know, that yeah. CNN did that everybody was crapping on, where it's just like, okay, you're basically bringing your own people into the town hall to ask you softball questions. This is a complete waste of our time.
Yeah,
that's sort of what these debates have become.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to, you know, George W. Bush used to have his press conferences where he would have people in his staff put on press jackets and ask questions. Yeah, you know, political theater.
Yeah, and I think I would love to have an actual debate where, you know, Americans ask questions. I would love to have somebody, frankly, that is not your typical Washington White House correspondent or somebody, for the love of God, that lives outside the Beltway. And I'm not talking about New York City. You know, somebody who has a normal life, who can ask questions about issues that matter to everyday Americans. And it's just not, I feel like we end up getting into the weeds about, tell me about your healthcare policy and your 5-point plan to whatever. And it's like, no, like I really want to know what you're going to do to help me in the next 5-10 years.
So you don't want just prepackaged, you know, talking points, sound bites, little 7-second quips that can be neatly tucked into the news report in the morning?
I mean, I think I'm all about a politician using that, but you got to give me the next 7 words. I want to hear what the rest of your statement is. Sure, give me a soundbite. I'm fine with that soundbite, but you better have something to back it up.
But do we want that? I mean, as a country, because we keep tolerating these reality show debates, do we as a country actually want substantive debates? Because I said, you know, a couple of debate cycles ago, we should have debate offs. It should be like an NCAA bracket. You should have some voter participation, you know, some polling, you know, this seems to me we could do this if Rome truly is burning and it is all spectator sport, let's at least pick a winner in a more democratic fashion.
I agree, because it seems like the requirements to get into this debate were laughable. You had the one guy who was paying people $20 to give him a dollar.
One?
Yeah, like
try three.
Yeah, and it's just like it's so ridiculous that, I mean, it's laughable. But again, it's the Republican Party is running this thing. So, surprise.
Yeah, no surprise. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. If you want to check out the incredible reporting she does there. Got to get your thoughts on the, change topics, obviously. Good segue, I'm sure you saw there. The Prigozhin thing evidently got thrown out of a window out of a plane. Any thoughts on the comments by Putin? You know, he made some mistakes. happens.
That was pretty funny. That statement was sort of riddled with a little bit of hidden meaning. My favorite conspiracy theory about this is that he was not on that plane. He was on the second plane, which is what his Telegram channel, somebody was saying that on there. And if that is the case, then he needs to change his name to John Smith and go live in the Maldives.
No, this is what I said yesterday. No. He's not going to be John Smith in the Maldives. He's going to be Elvis in Nashville.
Right?
No, I said this yesterday. I go, you know, if he was a smart guy, I'm sure, you know, there's the potential that he was on a different plane, that he's just disappearing. He knows that his days are numbered. So he threw himself out of a proverbial plane to get out of harm's way. But who knows? At this point, we'll never know.
I know. And I mean, again, if he's smart, then he is using this as an opportunity to flee. And who knows, maybe he's, you know, riding a donkey over the border or something like that. But there was more than just him on that plane. There were a bunch of people that were part of the Wagner group that were in that. And so now the Wagner group is is raging against the Putin government and threatening retribution. So it's like, oh, great. So now you've killed a bunch more of them and you're hacking off the mercenaries. So it's just going to be another like rare fight happening.
Is that a good thing for Ukraine, though?
It is a good thing. Yeah, for Ukraine, distract Putin with a bunch of crazy mercenaries that are going to try to march to Moscow.
Yeah, I got to think that wouldn't be a bad thing. I got to get your thoughts on this as well. Jim Jordan and the Republicans are, again, subpoenaing everyone. They want Biden's bank records, credit card statements. Kind of ironic, you know, that the people who defended Trump hiding his tax returns are now saying, we're going to impeach if you don't give us your bank records. Seems kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, right? It does. It seems ridiculous. I think the perfect comment that I saw was that Jim Jordan is subpoenaing Fannie Willis for all of the records in Fulton County and whether or not she's been talking to the special counsel. And the best comment I heard was, how about you, if Fannie Willis agrees to that, then you tell us everything about the Ohio wrestling team scandal. What was really going on there? Ouch. Right? I was like, oh, burn. But really, I mean, again, like I think we call them out on this, where it's just like, okay, you first, right? Like, show me everything you got, Jim Jordan. Like, you really want to talk about, oh, Americans deserve to see this, then you first.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think all of this stuff has to play out in public. I think all of this stuff has to be, you know, right front and center. I do find it interesting, however, that the Trump legal team, and I love the fact that, you know, I talked about this a couple of days ago, that they asked for a court date in 2026. Not just, you know, just say, you know what, next lifetime.
Yeah.
We're born again.
It's so sad and pathetic because I think what their excuse was is, well, it took you guys 2 years to collect all that evidence and to make your way through it and make your case. So therefore, it's going to take us 2 years. And basically what Jack Smith told them is, dude, you had all this information. Half this stuff is your tweets. The other half are your speeches. So like a third of the stuff in the documents actually came from you. So if you don't know that, like, you have a bigger problem on your hands.
No, this is one of those things where I would go, okay, you could have a 2026 court date. Trump's remanded to custody.
There you go. I love that. I support that.
You know, he's not going to be out there living or house arrest. I'll be generous. House arrest. You could stay on. He could stay in Bedminster. He can play golf. He can stay walk around on the fields there. But that's it. Nowhere else.
Yeah, you're nicer than I would be. I'd put him in Mar-a-Lago during the heat wave and humidity of the summer in Florida
with no air conditioning. Is that where you? Yeah. But wouldn't that be cruel and unusual?
Right, for real, that'd be like all the other prisons in America.
But here's the thing, and this is, I'm glad you brought that up because we were told Trump was going to be treated just like everybody else, and yet he got to put his own vital signs down, his own height, his own weight. They got him in and out a lot quicker than it seemed everybody else. So he's not really being treated like everyone else. And oh, by the way, we have a national bail bonds company. Foster's is now the most famous bail bond company in history, beating out Chico's, of course. Thoughts?
That's tragic because I saw an ad. I swear to you, it's got to be real. It looked like it was from, one of the old TV commercials, and it was Jesus Christ bail bonds. And I was like, this is what we need, because that is righteous, my friend.
Oh, the fun, the entertainment. And the thing is in this, the part that bothers me in all this, and I'm going to go, so I want to finish this up, is there still are no plans on how to make life better. All they did during the debate was attack Biden. And like I've said 1,000 times, I like the policies that we're moving towards. But all they've got is anger, fear, smear, and attack and reality TV. And again, what does it say about us that anyone is paying attention to that?
That's going to get you through a Republican primary, though. That is who the Republicans are now. And so that will get you through a Republican primary. Once you get to the general election, boy, you better have some policies. You better have some ideas, because people want to know. Otherwise, you're done.
Crazy times. But Sarah, as always, I appreciate the time. Good to have you back. Look forward to having you back again next week.
Thank you so much. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1970. That was the day that the United Farm Workers went out on strike against California lettuce growers. The United Farm Workers had led a successful boycott against grape growers that had drawn national attention to the harsh working conditions and low pay of those who harvested our nation's food. In an effort to keep the United Farm Workers from organizing lettuce workers, some of the growers had signed contracts with the Teamsters Union. The United Farm Workers argued that these contracts did not represent the workers' best interests. As thousands of workers went on strike, Cesar Chavez called for a national boycott of all non-union lettuce. In the lead-up to the strike, an estimated 4,000 workers attended a meeting in Salinas, California. One worker, Antonio Segredo, explained the importance of the action. Rael Macaredo, voice of the Farm Worker newsletter, reported his words, quote, "Let the people and the government of the United States know that we are ready to work, but that we must have what we ask. It isn't very much. We don't ask the impossible, only that they look upon us as human beings. We have the same ambitions that they do. We have families. We have rights. Why must they continue to treat us like beasts of burden and look for a thousand ways to bring us down?" That December, Cesar Chavez was jailed for leading the boycott. Putting pressure on the growers through encouraging the public to boycott non-union harvested food was a key tactic for the farm workers' movement. It impacted the bottom line of the growers and moved them to sit down at the bargaining table. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So if you didn't know anything about the Republican Party and you watched that debate, I gotta think that all you would come away with is a bunch of people who don't really have a pathway forward, but hate public sector workers, especially teachers. Chris Christie went after, touted his factory. We took on those teachers. We stole their pensions from them. I mean, he actually said that out loud. This is the part that's amazing to me. They come out and say the most anti-worker stuff, and no one seems to really hold them accountable for it. You know, all of them, we're gonna shrink the size of government, we're gonna drag them to bathtub, drown it, kind of. Those are working people's jobs. Those jobs do things in the community to ensure that services get done, that things get done, people get helped. Part of a community. By running on this platform that we're just going to destroy our community, it's quite my mind goes into a profane tirade of thoughts, but I sit here and I think about this, the fact that they're without shame, without recourse, they're very, look what I did. I harmed working people. Does that not make you crazy? I know. It's somebody else. And this is the thing that the Republicans play masterfully. This idea that, the other, It's not you. No, no, you're perfect. You're the and right wing radio has built this over the decades, because I see this all the time when you talk to people. No. It's not you, or it's not me. It's them. It's those others. They kept talking about immigration. They kept talking about, oh, the immigrants are bringing all the fentanyl in. And you go, then what's your policy? Oh, we're gonna put up a giant wall with razor blades. Well, that's not gonna work. That's not gonna happen. No sane, rational society is going to allow that to happen.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.